many nerds, too many nerds is what I like. Inducting and dancing and dying around the mic. They interview cause they got guests and they will school you about comedy, comedy, ha, 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 ha. Comedy nerds, I wanna know all what they know. This is the comedy, comedy nerd show. Comedy, comedy, ha, ha, nerds, ha, ha. What's so funny, they tell you so. Ha, 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 nerds.
Hey, what's up, everybody? How you doing? You're listening to the Comedy Nerds. I'm Dan McInerney.
I'm Def Diodato.
And I want to give the audience at home, because I realize, you know, this is a somewhat limited medium.
Yeah.
So you're only listening. You can't see. You can't get the other senses in there. So I just want the audience at home to know that I smell bad. And I think it's important. I came over here from working in the yard. I was chopping down branches. I was cutting up wood. I did not shower. This morning, I did not shower after I was done working in the yard. So it's important to me for everyone to understand, because I want them to get the full, you know, the full experience.
Right.
When they're listening to this.
I appreciate that you pointed out that is a limitation of our particular medium.
Yes.
As though other than being in a room with somebody,
right,
there's a medium that translates whether or not a person smells bad.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, perhaps someday. Well, because here's the thing. Maybe someday in the future, people will be listening to this, like, I mean, like 100 years from now, and they're like, "Well, I don't understand. When I turn on the smell-o-vision, and I smell famous things from around the world."
But it's never going to be an invention.
You don't think so?
It is never going to be an invention.
You know what?
What?
Maybe I'll prove you wrong.
Okay.
Maybe I'll invent it. And oh, thank you. Sound engineer lit a candle to get the horrible smell out of the room. So thank you very much. Anyway, point is, I will invent the smell-o-vision. I will lose all my money, and I'll be destitute. And then when you come to see me lying in the gutter, I'll go, "Aha! I invented it, you fool. So I have bested you once again. Now can I please have a quarter? Because I am so very hungry."
And I will say, "No, I have now bested you."
No!
"Because I have the quarter."
Oh, my God.
"And you will have lost. And I will laugh."
And
"you will cry."
Wow.
"And you will poop yourself."
Well, I will say this. You are a worthy opponent, sir.
Thank you.
You have defeated me, but it was an honor.
I defeated you in the future once again.
In a fake future thing that could never happen. All right, so what's going on? You want to do the...
Let's get into the news.
Well...
Now that we did 2 minutes on Smell-O-Vision.
So, let's talk... So the comics comic, our good friends,
yes,
over there.
Sean McCarthy.
He's a good guy. We saw him the other day at ECNY.
Yes.
He also lost, so we had something in common.
Mm-hmm.
We were in the same category. We both lost, and we cried. We cried a lot. I actually went up to him and said, "I said, you know what happened? We split the vote."
Which was probably a lie.
Yeah.
That's fine.
No, but you know, these are the lies you have to tell yourself. Anyway, he's been following, I actually don't know where it is. Is it? It's not comics, is it? No. Anyway, point is that they're doing the auditions for Last Comic Standing. We're just coming
here
back.
Here in New York City.
Here in beautiful New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just been reporting on the fact that the line apparently goes around the corner, goes a few more blocks. People have been out there for days. People have set up tents, which I don't understand how you don't get in trouble for that. But
what do you mean?
Like, if I were to set up a tent on 23rd Street and just be living in a tent.
If you set up a tent on a line, then it's okay. If you set up a tent in general, then it is wrong.
Well, I know, but still, like, that still seems odd. Like, you're living on the street in a tent. Like, I understand it's temporary, but still. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that seems an odd distinction. The cops be like, "Hey, wait a minute. Oh, this is a line you've set up? Well, then it's fine."
Okay.
That's not right. Anyway, that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is that people are literally living outside for days just to get on stage for 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
To audition for Last Comic Standing, which, I mean, there's the other thing is they're also doing, you know, regular auditions, like real auditions.
Yeah,
so
scheduled auditions.
It's not even like everyone has to do this. They're doing scheduled auditions too. So your chances of getting on the show after waiting 8 days in a tent outside on 23rd Street are incredibly low.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether to pity these people.
I don't know. The thing is,
I can't think of the word, but admire them, you know, or to think how courageous they are and how much drive they have.
No, I mean, I admire their drive, but anytime you see people in those lines, I mean, this, although, like, you know, you look at the American Idol thing and it's like all these people, but somebody wins.
Right.
And somebody's going to win. It's a way more rigged with Last Comic Standing. But, like, the thing is, like, I'm, you know, odds are if you're a comedian in that line, you know other people in that line. Although it is surprising from everything I've heard, all the comedians that you did not know existed in the line.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, you, like you said, it's like three blocks long. There's like, you know, 700 comedians. And like, I know most comedians. Or not most. I mean, it's New York City, so there's a lot that I don't know. But I know enough that, like, you know, I should know 80% of the people in that line. And I bet I probably know like 20 people.
Right.
But the thing is, even if I know those 20 people, I am still mildly aware of the hierarchy that I have, like, within the comedy world. You know, like, where they're, like, I consider myself a very funny comedian, and I have my own unique voice and all that. But there are definitely comedians where I was like, oh, that guy, like, is more advanced than me, is better than me, right? It's, you know, whatever. And if you know that they're going to pick three people max, and you see 10 people ahead of you that are funnier than you, you're like, I'm good. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's one thing if it's just like, oh, we all wait online for a couple hours and who knows. But if it's like, oh, I'll wait online on Sunday and then I will get in on Thursday. No, that's not, you know, I mean, yeah, you're chasing your dream and all that, but that just seems so low probability, so ridiculously low probability. And you know that you're probably not going to be on your best 6 days in.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing too, like, I have a ton of jokes about peeing into a bucket that I just came up with, a whole new
that's the thing. Most of your, all the material that you're gonna want to do is about standing in a line. If you've been in a line for 6 days, every funny joke to you is gonna be a, like, and they're killed in the line.
Yeah,
you know, I'm sure there's a ton of great line jokes being told in the line, but none of them are gonna work on these people.
I mean, well, see, I think there's a, I think that's what maybe separates us from a lot of people, because I would probably think
we have almost no drive to 16.
No, but I mean, I would sort of think the same way too. Or like, is it? I mean, not to say is it worth it, but really, is it worth it to stand in line for 6 days for 2 minutes and be like, oh, all these people, you know, that guy's better than me, that guy's better than me, that guy's better than me.
That's Kelly Clarkson.
Well, but that's the thing, that, like, I think there, a lot of comedians don't think that way. They basically have to shut those voices up. Like, they don't think, like, oh, wait a minute, you know, that guy has a better 2 minutes than I do, so why am I even
here? Well, I think the argument for those comedians are typically, because most of them are also unemployed, is what the fuck else am I doing?
Yeah.
You know, like, I got nothing more pressing going on.
Yeah.
So sure, I'll stand in the line for the 1% chance, because otherwise I got to get a temp job tomorrow and I don't want a temp job.
Yeah.
So I get why you would do it, but you're probably better off.
Well, I mean, it just, yeah. Or, you know, I don't know, do something else. Like, you know, spend that time working on other things. But you're saying, like, well, that guy's better than me. I think a lot of those comics on the line are just like, I am the greatest comedian who's ever lived, and it's just everyone else is stupid for not recognizing that fact, and all I have to do is get up on that stage and someone will see me, and then that'll be,
but that is untrue. You can think that you're a very funny person, you know, like, I admire my sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that I have a unique slant on things or whatever, but compared to, like, a really super seasoned stand-up comedian, I'm not as good as them. Whether or not my mental ability to write jokes is better than them, it may very well be. I see plenty of comedians on a daily basis who are writing worse material than I write.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that I'm where they are, you know, or that I could compete against them.
Right.
Because they are more seasoned stage performers than me. And I'm working towards it, and I will achieve it, and it, you know, it could happen, but that doesn't change that right now, at this moment, they are funnier than me in what I am trying to do.
Right.
And I'm just aware of that. And I think, you know, you don't ever want to go into something with the thought that you're not funny and that you can't pull it off, but you also have to be aware of, like, you know, I'm not going to beat this person in this particular scenario.
Right.
And I know that. You know, no matter how confident I'm feeling, I always go to the Patton Oswalt well, but, like, if Patton Oswalt walks in the room, he wins. Yeah. Even if he had to write the material in 30 seconds and I had 3 weeks. Like, he, you know, there's something, like, a skill that he's obtained that, you know, a thing that you find, a Zen place that you can get to, that as you progress in your career, you find more often.
Sometimes
you get lucky, yes. But in that scenario, with those many people, with that many people, I'd feel like, okay, if I know that I'm not going to beat these 10 people, screw it. But that's a negative attitude.
And yeah.
Conan O'Brien would slap my face for it.
He would. That giant white hand coming at you. Can you imagine waiting for 6 days and then getting up there and then your first joke doesn't land? You're like, oh my God, I waited six days for that, for an awkward silence after the first punchline. That would just be
And you're going to get
nightmare.
It. Because on the other side of it is somebody's been like, they're going through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of comedians. You don't laugh, no matter how funny, like, the 400th comedian is.
Yeah.
You're not going to laugh out loud.
I'm starting to get burned out, yeah.
I don't laugh out loud at shows now.
Yeah.
And I've not seen 400, like, wannabe comedians.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, for every really funny comedian, and I'm sure there are hundreds of funny comedians in that line, there are also the worst people in the world on that line too, I'm sure.
Yeah,
they're the
a lot of them are, you know,
the comedians where you're just like, you're not really, like, you're doing sock puppets, really? Okay.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I know. I would love to just try to get into the mind of one of those people where it's like, do you not know that you're terrible? Like, you've been doing it. Because I met a lot of guys when I first started out who've been doing it for 20 years. And I was like, oh, really? Oh, I can't wait to see you get up on stage and maybe I can learn some things from you. And then watch their set. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm 19 and I know that you are terrible.
Well, like, for some people, doing the Last Comic Standing auditions, they realize if they're not going to make the show, go as weird as you can, because maybe you'll make the montage.
Uh-huh.
And once you make the montage, you can write, appeared on Last Comic Standing. And people do.
Yeah.
You know, like, anytime you see a show that's like independently booked, that's not like at a club or whatever, there's always the person's name and then a parentheses of the most impressive thing that they did.
Yeah.
And you'd be shocked how many bad montage people use Last Comic Standing as their thing.
I wouldn't be shocked. But
no, that's true.
I believe you. I believe you very much. But I would not be shocked.
All right, moving on to our next topic, I guess.
This is kind of a weird story, but I just wanted to bring it up. So this comedian in Canada named Guy Earl was getting heckled at a club by these two ladies, and he made some disparaging remarks about their possible sexual orientation. Hmm. The quotes are in the article. I'm not going to read them, but they're pretty brutal. Well, I'll read
one. Is there something somebody could Google? That way they could figure out what you're...
Well, this basically, one of the lines was, "You must be on the rag, you stupid dykes," was what he said.
Okay.
Now, that's, you know, I'm not defending anything that he said. It's terrible.
Uncalled for, unnecessary.
Whatever. Thank you. It's disgusting.
Yes.
However, he is now, in Canada at least,
mm-hmm.
facing a human rights tribunal. Now, as much as what he said was terrible, they're just words.
Yeah, but it's Canada.
Canada's right.
Very polite.
I understand.
Canada is incredibly polite. If you don't say thank you, I think you pretty much get put on trial for human rights.
That's what I'm saying. And I mean, so again, I know this is a little weird because it's not our country, so there's not a lot we can do about it. But
except invade them.
He didn't force anybody into slavery. He didn't, you know,
yeah.
I don't know. He didn't shoot anybody. They're just simply words. And I realize that in Canada, they don't have the same freedom of speech that we have.
Because of the Queen.
Yeah. No, seriously. I don't know if directly because of her.
No,
but
it is. The fucking Queen of England ruined everything.
I'm
right.
It is
Sound
important.
Engineer agrees.
Okay. No. Fair enough. All right, Sound Engineer. We get it. You agree with him. Enough. No. Stop yelling about how much you agree with what Dustin said. First of all, I think it's important for anyone community who goes to Canada or goes to England to understand that they do not have the freedom of speech, no. So don't start shooting your mouth off.
And they will torture you all willy-nilly.
You can get I've heard about people getting serious trouble because they're like, well, this is freedom of speech, right? They're like, no, that's America. It's completely different over here. We are proud of the fact that we do not have a freedom of speech in England.
I did not know
we
that.
Have the, well, they're more concerned about the right of privacy,
oh, okay.
as is most of Europe, is more, the right of privacy is more important, where here in America, the freedom of speech is more important. Point is that it's sort of a weird thing where I don't want to offend what he said, but it's, you start going down a slippery slope. Like, where is the line? Like, some, I may have said something on stage. I've said terrible, terrible things on stage in the name of comedy, and I would hope that people understand that it was a joke, that I'm making fun of those terrible things. But what if someone didn't understand that, and they were like, hey, you violated my human rights. you have to go on trial for that. I mean, you know, again, freedom of speech doesn't protect the speech that you like. It protects the speech that you hate. Thank you, The People versus Larry Flint. Because that comes from that movie. Well, I think Larry Flint actually said it, but I saw it in the movie. So again, like, where, you know, what do you do with this case when it's someone that's clearly terrible, but
I think you have to throw it out because there's a certain understanding that goes into place at a comedy club.
Yeah.
Where there is, especially in a comedy club, there is an implied freedom of speech there. Because if you restrict, because, okay, that particular thing was awful.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's no question that that person should not have said it. I'm sure they regret it. They let themselves, you know, get to a point where they shouldn't have gotten, regardless. That doesn't change the fact that somebody like a Sarah Silverman, who says awful, awful things on stage, is part of their act.
Yeah.
If you're not protecting comedians against the fact that sometimes you're just going to say stuff that was meant ironically or whatever, like, if you're just going to take it by the word written on a piece of paper, then, like, then you can't have stand-up comedians.
Right, I understand. Yeah. I mean, it's sort of a weird thing because I don't think he meant it ironically.
No, in that case, I mean? He didn't. But
at the same time, though, you can't, you know, you kind of have to protect, when you protect everyone, you also have to kind of protect the assholes too. Like,
right.
You can't just say, oh, well, I don't like that, because also tastes change, things shift, you know what I mean? Like, a joke you said 20 years ago might now all of a sudden not be okay anymore, and now you're in trouble. Now, Mr. Earl didn't do himself a lot of help by, this is his quote, I don't hate anybody based on their sexual orientation or whatever. That's not quite a thank you. He says, but I do hate hecklers. Sometimes I get very vehement. So, I mean, we all hate hecklers. You can understand mm-hmm. how you can get crazy. But, you know, and this, of course, brings to mind the Michael Richards thing where he went a little crazy and never recovered.
Well, I think any comedian who's been heckled will tell you that when something like that happens, the reason that you're not going to get a ton of comedians who are having your back is that that was a shitty response to a heckler.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Be
you're,
smarter.
You're a comedian. Be more clever.
Yeah.
Just, you know, just saying something like that, that's just lame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, you know, we'll protect... Like, if he had said something that where you're like, no, there was a callback from this other thing, and it was really funny, and if you, like, you know, then you go, oh, okay. Like, I see, you know, but if it was just like you totally lacked any creativity, and you just shot back like that, people are like, oh, okay, then, you know, like...
Yeah.
Like, string them up.
It's like, yeah, well, it's like fifth grade, you know. Like, oh, are you on the rag? Oh, very, very good. That's, I've certainly never heard that one before. It's a good fifth grade taunt.
You can always just say, shut up.
Yeah.
You know?
Why don't you shut up?
Yeah.
Or whatever. Or just ignore them. Hey, you want to do sad news from the past?
Yes, let's
sad news! Sad news from the past! Hey, you guys ready?
Yeah. Yes.
You're ready for, I'm talking to the people at home, because you guys got to sit down and get ready.
I'm already sitting down.
Because we do sad news from the past.
Yes.
But I finally, in searching through Google News,
mm-hmm.
searching comedians and or comedy from the past, I found a happy story.
What?
Get ready.
I'll find the darkness in it. Don't worry.
Well, we'll see. So, unfortunately, I couldn't find much more than the headline. This is from 1932. Harold Lloyd to the rescue. Film comedian rescues children from a burning building.
Wow.
1932. Harold Lloyd ran into a burning building and carried children out. I don't know much more than that. I couldn't get much more than the headlines. I don't know where this happened. Find the darkness in that, my friend.
It's a lie.
No, that really happened.
I can't
tell
you how many times I've told this story about saving orphans from a fire.
But it was in the newspaper, though. I think it was. It happened.
I've told the newspaper about saving orphans from a fire.
Oh, okay. Well,
no, enough. I have not.
So, yeah. So
I want to,
go.
Though. Oh, my goodness.
But I think
that
this...
would be so much fun, wouldn't it? Saving orphans from a fire?
It would be fun. It would be fun afterwards.
Yeah.
At the time, I wouldn't be like, "This is fantastic! There's flames everywhere."
No, and you
it
know
is
what?
Like I am in Hades. Hooray!
I'll bet it is so much worse than it really seems like it would be, because ignoring the fire.
Yeah.
Because orphans typically have a very poor attitude,
mm.
and they are they are mad at everybody because yeah. they're orphans.
Yeah.
And Like the older ones. Like the little ones, maybe, you know, but they're also bitter.
Right.
Like, orphans generally are not happy folks. Yeah. So I imagine if you went into an orphanage and tried to save the kids, they'd still be like, "You don't own me. You
yeah.
don't control me. I'll go out when I want to go out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can protect myself from a fire." Right. And you're like, "Hey, I just knocked down the door with an axe."
Right.
And they still hate you.
Yeah. They're like, "But are you my dad?"
Yeah.
Then go to hell.
You protect, you. Yeah, you take them out and they're like, "Oh, you're just going to leave now and get other orphans?"
Mm-hmm.
You jerk.
Yeah.
Now that I've gotten attachment to you, you're just going to go.
Just going to leave.
Yeah. So you got to be, I think you're better off, maybe like in that story, it doesn't necessarily assume that it is orphans.
It doesn't, and nowhere did it say orphans.
I know.
You jumped to orphans.
But what house has a bunch of kids?
I don't know.
It's just a house with like kids living
well,
in
back
it?
Then everyone had like 12 kids. So it probably was just a normal house.
And there was no babysitter?
A ton of kids in it.
Although
know.
I guess there would be an adult in an orphanage too. I guess they don't just drop kids off in an orphanage.
They don't just... hand them sharp sticks and say, "You kids figure this out. You're on your own."
They do.
It's a Lord of the Flies kind of situation. Build your own society.
I'm just saying, given the choice between saving orphans and saving a group of kids in a house,
I
would prefer that they not be orphans.
Right. I mean, no one's going to argue with you. If nothing else, I don't want to touch their freaking ratty clothes.
Yeah.
I mean, they're disgusting.
Yeah.
You know, they got polio and all kinds of tuberculosis.
They always want more soup.
And they're like, "Oh, I got to go work in my coal mine. Like, mm-hmm. can we get this over with? I got a job to get to." So, yeah, orphans are the worst. No one's disagreeing with you that orphans are just the worst.
Sound engineer is not enjoying our orphan.
But what I'm saying is that here's what I'm saying. I would hope that this one story makes up for all the other sad stories that I've told you. Harold Lloyd, famous film comedian, carries kids out of a burning building. How could you not be more excited about this story?
All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will get into our topic for this week.
Cynical, sad little people that you're not happy about that story. We'll be right back.
Do you have a question or topic you would like to hear the Comedy Nerds discuss? Send us an email to info@thecomedynerds.com or stop by the site and click Contact Us at the top of the page. We look forward to hearing from you at thecomedynerds.com.
Hey, and we're back.
We are back.
You guys are listening to the Comedy Nerds. I'm resetting. I feel like Kenny thought of something last week. I want to make sure we reset, in case someone's tuning in halfway through on their iPod.
Yeah.
They can know what they're listening to. They won't be like, "What? What is this? I don't understand."
So getting into today's topic, actually comes from this week's Entertainment Weekly, kind of.
Okay.
Because we talked about like sketch and stand up and all that kind of stuff like that. And one other area that we don't really hit too much, and I think we may actually be hitting a little bit more in next week's episode, but I'll get into that later. Is like video, video thing and. The specific article that we'll be referring to throughout the rest of this half of the podcast is an article about 5 tips for directing comedians.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the, like, making something genuinely funny when you're recording it it doesn't translate equally as well.
Yeah.
Just something that's funny on stage isn't always necessarily as funny when you take it out of the room and all that. Sean... Levy or Levi, I do not know how it is pronounced, but I'm sure I will get yelled at by Nick Turner, who is the director of Date Night and the Night at the Museum movies, which I'm counting on Date Night being better than the Night at the Museum movies, gave 5 tips for directing comedians. I thought we'd go through them and see if we agreed, disagreed, although we should probably agree with him because he is directing movies full time.
Yeah, I don't know if I could really so much disagree with him. I'd be like, no, every time I've directed Steve Carell. This is what has happened to me. Okay.
But I don't know that I agree with all of these exactly in the way that he phrases them.
All right. Well, let's start with the first one.
Yes. Yeah. Although it's a little metaphory, it's the advice tip number one is build a quirky house, and what he means by that. He does this whole story about a sycamore tree and blah, 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 and the sycamore tree character. And basically he said, build around your funniest comedian.
Right.
And, like, feed everything to him, even though it may make it a little weirder or whatever. Go around, build everything around your funniest comedian. And I guess I kind of agree with that, but I don't know. That just seems like a weird
thing to say. Well, I'm not quite sure what that means, actually.
Either am I.
Oh, okay. Well, you mean, so, like... I guess...
I mean, specifically it says when you direct a big-time, super-talented comedian, think Sycamore, build a movie around the tree.
Okay.
So, I guess Night of the Museum-wise, it's not about the museum, it's about Ben Stiller.
Right, which I kind of understand, is don't get lost in the mechanics of the movie. You know what I mean? Like, don't worry so much about, like, the plot and stuff. I mean, you should be worried about that, but also try to make sure that your comedian is just being funny and don't like, spend 20 minutes with him off screen because you got to get some, you know, plot points A through K out that don't involve him. Like, make sure that, you know, he's doing his thing as much as possible. That makes sense.
But that being said, you're still a storyteller, right. You know, and like tell the story.
Yeah.
You know, and the comedian will fit into it logically.
Mm.
It does differentiate between two different types of movies. There's ones that are like specifically entertaining because they're funny, and there are ones that you actually care about the story throughout.
Right.
And I think this particular note is referencing a movie where it's just like, where it's a vehicle movie. You know, because there are definitely things where it's like, here's Steve Carell doing something. You know, like any movie Jim Carrey's in, for the most part, is a Jim Carrey vehicle.
Movie.
And you just let him do his thing, and it's funny, and it's great, and I think that advice applies there. But most Jim Carrey movies are not necessarily good stories.
Right. Well, that's actually funny, too, because I feel like you're saying that, like any Jim Carrey movie, or any movie Jim Carrey's in, for the most part, yeah. Any movie Jim Carrey's in is a Jim Carrey movie. Whereas, like, I don't know if, like, Steve Carell, like, he usually kind of fits in, even if he's the star. I feel like he fits in a little bit more. So, like, any movie Steve Carell is not necessarily a Steve Carell movie.
Right.
Like, I don't think of The 40-Year-Old Virgin, even though Steve Carell is obviously the star of it, I don't think of it as a Steve Carell movie. That's not how I would describe it, because he kind of fits in to the world a little bit more, whereas, like, it's just... turn on the camera and watch Jim Carrey bounce off the walls for 90 minutes, and then it's over.
But I think Ben Stiller falls into that, and this is this guy's article. I think Ben Stiller are often Ben Stiller movies.
Yeah. He's Ben Stiller is doing his Ben Stiller thing.
Yeah. He's going to be mad about something or whatever, and bad things are going to happen, and he's going to yell at them.
A mummy's missing. Yeah. I've never seen Night at the Museum, but I assume that that's what it's about.
A mummy is not missing.
A mummy has been lost. No. He has to find the mummy.
That is all wrong. Everything about what you're saying is incorrect. It doesn't even take place in a museum. It's a meadow. No.
It takes place at a town called Museum.
Yes.
Anyway, let's move on to number two.
Don't be a dictator.
Oh. I'm glad you said tater at the end of that.
Yeah.
I thought this article was about to get interesting.
The collaborative process not only benefits the movie, it makes work a hell of a lot more fun.
Yeah.
Which, on one hand, I agree. And again, on one hand, I disagree. Because you get a bunch of comedians together acting out in a movie, they're going to bring it wherever the hell they want to bring it.
Mm.
And somebody's got to go, okay, you know, like, I get that we're all trying to, you know, be funny here or whatever. But, like, can we just get through this?
Well, there's ways to do that without being a dictator. I know what you're saying, but there's ways to keep everyone in line for the good of the movie and not just, like, you know, yelling and screaming.
Right, but I'm just saying that on a set for anything comedy-related, there's always got to be somebody who's sober.
Yeah.
You know, there's always got to be that one person that's like, no, like, it's great. Everything is great, but...
Right.
Like, we're going to lose the light in an hour. So, like, just fucking say the lines the way you're supposed to say them, and then we'll improvise it.
Well, I mean, that is the director's job, but at the same time, like, you're also dealing with comedians where the moment you try to have some authority over them, they're immediately going to rebel against it. So it's almost like the more you push, the more they're going to pull away from you. Whereas if you try to bring them
But isn't that treating comedians like they're babies?
Because
a real actor, if a director said, no, I'm not buying that your character is whatever.
Right.
You know, like, be more sad or be more whatever, you know, be more complex. That actor is not going to be like, fuck you to the director. They're going to be like, oh, okay, I need to give the director exactly what they need.
Right.
And to turn around and say, well, comedian's so fragile that he can't handle that or she can't handle that, that seems a little coddly.
I mean, maybe, but I don't know if that's also necessarily completely wrong. I mean, I think they are, you know, they are fragile and they will kind of shut down. That's not to say that every one of them will. That's also not to say
that. Does that just mean that they're worse actors?
Every actor. No, I mean, I don't know. Like, I know it's not exactly the same thing, but like Christian Bale flipped the F out. And that's the thing too. Like, I don't know if they necessarily do that, but I just think you wouldn't. You're like, it can be intense on set when you're doing an intense movie, but I don't think you want it to be tense on set when you're trying to then turn around and be like, okay, now be hilarious. Like, that's not quite, it's not what you want to do.
I think it's creating the right environment.
Creating the right environment. Yes, I would agree with that. Yeah, I mean, I think that's super important. I mean, because also, like, I, everything I've ever done, like, when I've been in a commercial or something, like, it's really weird because, now, look, I'm sure I'm not a star. I don't get any special privileges. But it's like, it seems like they're worried about everything else. Like, you're standing there waiting to do your thing, and they're setting up the lights, and somebody's talking, and someone wants to know when lunch is, and like everything. And then it's just like, oh yeah, also buy, okay, ready in action and be awesome. And it's like, I've been standing here for like 20 minutes. Like, I'm really uncomfortable. Like, and now you got to turn around and like be like hilarious in one take, cause we really got to get this shot. We got to go. And it's a really weird thing. You know, you're sort of thinking like you're focused on everything else except for kind of the one thing.
But remember, the crew's sitting there thinking, I just been working for the last 20 minutes to make sure that this shot is right. You didn't have shit to do. You better get it right.
No. I don't agree with that. I totally agree with that. But, and I understand that, but it's, you know, it is a weird thing where it's like, but shouldn't we be making sure that, you know, we're in the right frame of mind to do the best kind of thing? Because the other thing is like, you could say like, well, just do it and get it over with, but then it exists forever. You know, it's like, couldn't we take an extra 10 minutes to make sure we're all in the right frame of mind and do one more take and make sure we got it, as opposed to, oh, we made a shitty movie that will be shitty for the rest of our lives and there's nothing we can do about it. Unless you're George Lucas, you can go back and change it. But
yeah, then you can make it 3D.
But I mean, I think that's the thing too. Like, I think that's important to just like have it be, because it affects you so much. Like, you wouldn't think like the stuff that happens when the cameras aren't rolling affects you, your performance.
No, but it
does very much so, much more than you would think. Number three,
he calls it "Think Apocalypse Now," and by that he means never yell cut. Let the actor get all the way through the scene a bunch of times. And this one I do agree on, because usually that's when somebody can find it. When they're all of a sudden now, like, improvising to a degree as the character, that's usually when the awesome stuff comes out.
Mm-hmm.
The first few takes are like, okay. And then, you know, and then usually there's something amazing that comes up, like, around the 11th take where you're bored saying the line.
Yeah.
And even though they may have done something different, you'll just cut a different angle or whatever and make the awesome thing happen. Because I've discovered, at least in my experience, that if you do 30 takes, like, maybe you get one take that you like, but there are brilliant parts of each of the other takes, and you can always figure out a way to steal them. So just let the person go, because if you keep stopping them saying one word exactly the right way, it's going to be miserable.
Yeah. And also, usually they'll figure out, you know, hopefully if they're a professional, they'll figure out why it's not working. You don't necessarily have to tell them. That goes back to the same thing. Like, let them figure it out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Don't just be like, okay, say the line like this. Like, let them. Because they could also find something. That's the other thing that's amazing, too. Like, they could find something that's better than what you had thought. You know what I mean?
Right.
You have an image in your head, and then they come along like, well, what if I did it this way? And you're like, wow, that's even better. That's even better. So don't, it goes back to the being tyrant thing. Like, let people find it themselves.
Okay, well, I'm going to jump us to number four here, because this sort of contradicts what we've been saying.
Uh-oh.
Number four is, don't ask your performer to save a scene through improv.
Mm.
which, as a comedian and a director of comedians, I've always asked them to do that. And I know that you're not supposed to do it, but I mean, like, that's part of, for most places, that's part of the comedic setup.
Right.
You know, that you do a scene, you do a bunch of scenes, and you're like, okay, this isn't quite working. Let's see how we can mess around with it and see what we can find. Because usually the brilliance is in the thing that once the person knows the character so well that they can say something that's comfortable and in their voice and that's funny.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can derail it, but if the scene's already sucking, that seems like the way to go. If the person, you know, but some comedians can't do it. And that's the thing where you run into where the difference between a comedian and a comedic actor.
Mm.
You know, like, you can usually count on a person who's got a Second City background or a UCB background to do that. But if all of a sudden you turn around to somebody who came up through, like, you know, some sort of Shakespeare background, but discovered they were good at comedy, then you might just be getting a bunch of crap over and over and over again. So right. I guess that's kind of subjective. And I feel like with, you know, especially because this guy was directing, like, Ben Stiller and, you know, Steve Carell and Tina Fey, like, I think they can save most shit with improv. You know, like, it seems like an odd thing for him to say because they, you know, they could improv a whole movie and it would be hilarious.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, though. You say that, but first of all, that puts a lot of pressure on the comedian.
Yeah, which, well, they're getting paid a lot of money.
I understand that, but you're trying to relieve pressure from that. You're trying to make them be in a good place. And the other thing is, like,
wussies. They're wussies.
You know, this is whatever. It's a $100 million movie, and you're like, okay, you got 3 minutes to come up with something that's going to save this movie. I mean, the reason why there's 15 writers on a TV show is because some days one of the writers is going to come in and he's not going to have a good day. And he's not going to think of anything funny. Even though he's an incredibly talented writer, that one day, he's just going to have an off day. He's not going to think of anything. So if that's Steve Carell's off day, and you're like, listen, you got to come up with something hilarious to save this movie right now, that's not fair. You know, that's a super hard thing to do. You should have worked that out in the screenplay. Like, that's
no,
it's also not fair to be like, and then Steve Carell does something hilarious, like, in your screenplay.
No, I'm not saying that you shouldn't have, but I think you and I both know that there are certain times where everything works perfectly well on paper. Then you get there and you're just like, you know what? I'm not feeling this.
Right.
Like, it's not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, there's, like, when I actually see it with people, it's just not believable. It's not.
Well, the, and the other thing is with improv is, like, you can improv a scene that can be really funny.
Mm.
But if we've seen those movies where it's, you know, largely improvised and it's just, I mean, the movie itself is just a mess.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't go anywhere in particular.
But
there's no shape to it.
But don't you think Apatow would slap this guy in the face by saying, don't, like...
But I mean, how many people, like, I like Apatow and I like his movies, but, you know, how many people are just like, I can't watch it. It's everything's improvised. It's a mess. There's no structure to anything that happens.
An equal number of people that would say that about A Night at the Museum, I would imagine.
Why is it, like, highly improvised?
No, but it's A Night at the Museum.
Oh, well, but
there's a monkey that goes around slapping people.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I got to see this thing. Let's put this in my Netflix. No one told me there was a monkey slapping people.
Yeah.
Now I'm on board. So let me see if I got this straight. So he can't find the mummy, right? The mummy's missing. He's running around the museum. And then the monkey is slapping the mummy that's missing, or is he slapping Ben Stiller?
Slapping Ben Stiller.
Okay, then I'm in.
I mean, he'll slap whatever's around, but he specifically.
Does the monkey end up finding the mummy?
The mummy isn't missing.
Now I'm confused again. Now I'm lost. You had me for a second, and then you said something about the mummy, and now
okay.
I can't.
Ben Stiller is in the town of museum.
Okay.
Okay. And Amelia Earhart shows up. And, no.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
She's in the second one.
She is in the second one.
Yeah, I just thought of that. Like, oh, crap. She is in the second one.
Oh, you should have written the sequel.
I should have.
That would have been
awesome. There's a third one. There isn't a third one. I could write a third one.
Oh, yeah. You could write a third one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, written by...
All right, we're just going to pause it. I'll write a third one. And when I get back, we'll read it.
Come back. Just wherever the monkey... Just add more slapping.
Okay.
Add more monkey slapping. And I will green light it, if nothing else.
Wait, you're not going to green light it either way?
What?
I got to sell it to you now?
Yeah. I'm not just going to rubber stamp this thing.
Why not? Where we do a podcast together? I thought I'd at least have you on my side.
Yeah, I'm not saying I'm not on your side, Dustin. I'm just saying, look, it's a rough world out there. if I don't get at least 50 monkey slaps in a screenplay, I'm not greenlighting it. I mean, everyone knows that.
And that...
That's what happens when they came to me with Ordinary People. And I was like, you put more monkey slaps in this thing, and you got yourself a deal.
And that is the very reason that I'm not going to give you a quarter after you invent Smell-O-Vision.
I really need that quarter, though.
No.
But I can understand...
I brought it all the way back.
I can understand where you're coming from. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
You don't know what you're saying.
Improvisation is good, but it doesn't always mix with the world of the movies. It doesn't. And look, the other thing is, like, pretty much every Avatar we've ever seen, I've saw on DVD, so I can kind of sit at home. Like, I mean, you know, I saw Knocked Up in the theater, and about two-thirds of the way through, I was like, I'm about ready for this thing to wrap up. I'm enjoying it. It's fine. But I don't know if I need every side character needs to have their own plot line, you know, and we need a 10-minute long improvised scene about that. Like, I think, you know, so I can understand, like, again, like, improv, because I think the other thing is, like, directors probably think that improv is just a magic wand that you can wave around and it'll save your movie, and it's not true, you know? It's still a movie. You have to have all this worked out ahead of time. Now, if Steve Carell comes off with a hilarious line on set, yeah, throw it in. But... Don't just think, like, well, I don't have to come up with anything too great right now because I'll have Steve Carell and he'll fix it for me.
Yeah.
Which is, that's just, you know, it's a little joke, well, we'll fix it in post. Like, well, that's not, it's not a magic wand. You can't just fix everything after the fact.
And the last tip, which, like, fuck you.
wow.
Is laugh a lot. Which is, now do you understand why I said fuck you? Because it was like, laugh a lot, really? That's your tip for directing comedians?
I guess,
is to, like, think things are funny, really?
But I guess people can be so, like, it goes back to the dictator thing. Like, you can be so militant of, like...
I know, but I mean, you know, like, but to me, that's like...
Just...
That's like tip five being hit record on the camera. You know, like, oh, really? Because
really?
I hadn't been doing that with comedians. I had just been memorizing it and drawing it later.
Right.
So to me, that's like, that's four tips and some bullshit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, you know,
yeah,
but fostering a good attitude on set does. Cause I mean, that's like, we were talking about the comic thing.
Yeah.
Was that sound engineer?
Sorry.
No, you obviously wanted to say something. Yeah, you would, you would do that with everyone, you know, if you were having a...
Yeah, I mean, I'll bet they laughed a lot on the set of Schindler's List.
I don't know if they did, though.
I bet they did.
I don't know if that's true. I don't think they were having hilarious gags.
Yes, and I bet
I
they
know.
Did.
I don't know if that's true.
I bet you could put together a tremendously funny outtake reel from every horrible movie.
Yeah.
Like that. I'm sure that there's always something where, like, they don't put the outtake
reel out. It's a horrible
out.
Movie in the fact that it's upsetting.
Right.
Not that it's a horrible movie.
Right. No.
Because for a second, I was like, wow, I think Schindler's List was pretty good. I
like
it.
No, but I mean, like, I'm sure that every movie where there's, like, every Holocaust movie out there, there are outtakes where people who just, like, say something tremendously funny.
I don't know if that's true. I don't know if, like, you know, who was the guy? Was it Liam Neeson?
Yeah.
I forget now. I don't know if he, like, was, like, in the middle of a line and screwed up and was like, a blee blah bloop, blah blah.
I'll bet he did.
I don't know what's wrong with me today. Did. Like, no, I think he was just like, all right, let's take it again. Because this is a very serious movie, and we're doing this very seriously.
If somebody out there has time to find this, I would just love to see, there's got to be on YouTube, something where it's just like somebody in like a Schindler's List kind of movie just gets the giggles. And they're like, you know, they're there in their Nazi uniform.
I don't know if they
release
that stuff, though. I think maybe they just
somebody's
get rid
got
of it.
It.
I don't know. I really.
But that's what I mean.
I highly
but
doubt.
I'm just saying, like, they probably do get rid of it because it's Schindler's List. But my point is that I am confident that, like, that they are having fun on those sets.
Right, too. Right. I'm sure they are. But what I'm saying, though, is I'm sure it can also. I mean, first of all, you're dealing with a lot of creative, temperamental people, and there's a lot of pressure, and there's a lot of money, and I'm sure it can get very tense and not fun, you know? I mean, I've heard how many times have you heard someone talking about making a movie, and they're like, I hated it. It was not fun at all. It was terrible. So you're just trying to make it fun on set.
I haven't heard anybody say that. You're not.
And the other thing
that.
is that that's a good tip for life. Laugh a lot.
Oh, my God.
Don't. Also, wear sunscreen. That's another good tip.
Ride a unicorn that wherever
I learned
you go.
From a song.
Plant a tree.
Well, I guess we're out of time.
Kiss a rainbow.
We had, I can leave stuff for next week.
Yes.
If we want to wrap it up.
Yeah. No, we do have a question from the mailbag, but we'll work on it next week.
Yeah.
If we're out of time.
Cool. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. Dustin, thank you for recording with me.
Yeah.
Today.
Thank
Sound
you
engineer,
for recording
thank
with
you.
Me.
For recording the episode. Are you mad at me now? I was just
kidding. Are always mad at you.
Wow. Well, thank you. Thank you for your comment. It was very helpful. Thank you for recording the episode. We always appreciate you being here. We always appreciate you guys listening.
Dan, thank you for extending the ending as long as you possibly can.
I'm wrapping it up. You do this every time. I am literally putting a bow on it, and you're like, you're not doing it fast enough. I want to thank all you guys.
You were thanking the fucking light switch for being on. Like at this point.
Thank you, light switch, for being on. I'm sorry that I'm trying to thank, I'm trying to be gracious and thank everyone. But anyway, thank you, light switch. I appreciate the fact that you were on.
Thank you, listeners, for sticking around.
Anyway.
And please don't forget to post reviews on iTunes.
Oh my God. That's what I was going to say. Here's what I was going to say. Thank you guys so much for listening. Be sure to go to thecomedynerds.com for all your Comedy Nerds needs. And it's a great time there. And if you could go on iTunes and leave a review for us, a positive review, we'd appreciate it greatly. Thank you guys so much for listening.
And now?
And we'll talk to you next week.
And now here's Dan saying that exact same thing over a song. We'll talk to you guys later.
Okay. Goodbye. You've been listening to The Comedy Nerds. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at info@thecomedynerds.com. Check out our website at thecomedynerds.com where you can comment on any past episodes. And if you enjoyed this show, please write a review in iTunes and tell the world how awesome we are. For Dustin and myself, thank you for listening.